At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
$40,000 on shoes?
What's the matter, Morty?
Moral, this thing.
Can't you buy our whole dress?
Moral, this thing.
Great gowns.
Moral,
beautiful gowns.
Fashion has changed.
Moral,
no, it hasn't.
Hi, my name is Lauren Garoni.
And I'm Chelsea Fairless.
And welcome back to the Every Outfit podcast. I'm a little distracted because we are back in my closet, which was our temporary recording studio. It is now a temporary nursery, Chelsea. I don't know if you've noticed.
Yeah, it's getting hoarder-y in here. A Carrie Bradshaw closet, this is not.
Yes, and I can feel Chelsea, not just feel, I'm watching Chelsea look all around this closet, which really has not been organized since when I moved in a year ago, and silently judge all of my clothing.
I'm not judging shit. You have some great clothes in here. You have a couple of questionable things, but I'll get into that later.
I did pitch for a future Every Outfit TV episode that Chell and Tat style me, give me a postpartum makeover. So maybe one day the fuckettes will see this closet.
I'm so down for that. So when we recorded last week's episode, we had just heard about And Just Like That's cancellation, like minutes before. So now we've had a full week to process this news. How are you feeling?
I feel okay. Surprisingly enough, I'm okay with this news.
You?
How are you dealing with this news?
I'm also totally fine. However, this show has given us a lot. It's taken away from us in other ways, but it also has benefited us.
Absolutely.
And we're so grateful to everyone that listens to our recaps and watches this show and continues to watch this show.
I want to give special praise to the people who actually stopped watching And Just Like That and just listened to this podcast. They're the real MVPs this year. So there's been more gossip, more fallout. I feel like we should get into it. Do you want to start with the Dumois news story or do you want to start with the Radar Online?
Dealer's choice, Lauren.
Okay. On the last Dumois podcast, she revealed that a source said that And Just Like That was coming to an end due to a negotiations breakdown about the cost per episode and cast salaries. So according to this source, these negotiations started when season 3 started. Not sure if that means during filming or when the show was airing, and they ultimately could not come to terms. So that kind of puts it somewhere in between choosing to end the show, it being a mutual decision between Michael Patrick King, Sarah Jessica Parker, and HBO, the way that Michael Patrick King presented it in his statement, and also our feeling that it got canceled in the sense that they would have done another season, but they ultimately just couldn't for financial reasons because the show is very expensive. And if you didn't know it was expensive, you can really tell it's expensive from the last episode where you realize that they, one, spent 7 months making a marionette doll for a singular joke in one episode. And also waited until the 10th episode to furnish Carrie's apartment. And as we learned in this episode, had to recreate Carrie's original apartment.
They also recreated the facade of the Gramercy Park apartment, which is a real building, but it now also exists on a soundstage where I assume it is being torn down as we speak. Those fake lilacs are being thrown in a trash can somewhere in Queens.
I like to think that there's some HBO auditor who's like, you know, can we maybe move this facade? You know, they move houses sometimes, like they put them on a flatbed. It's like, can we maybe move this and put it onto the Gilded Age set? And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have this very salacious Radar Online story.
Radar Online has been breathlessly covering this.
Radar Online an outlet I didn't know still existed. I felt like I was transported back to 2007.
Yeah, how much should we trust Radar Online?
I mean, I would take it with a grain of salt. So they've run two stories thus far. You would think that this is Sarah Jessica Parker's mouthpiece because they claim friends and sources close to her have given quotes, but mainly the quotes come from this man named Rob Shooter, who has a gossip Substack where he ran an exclusive. Among other things, he says that HBO told her, but it wasn't a conversation. It was, quote, "We're done. No discussion, no collaboration, just final," which is very brutal. And he goes on to say that Sarah Jessica Parker thought that they were building something long term, that she was all in. What stings the most is how transactional it was. No party, no tribute.
She was all in. She was 100% in. Wait, was or are?
So if you want to believe the Dumois source and you want to believe this Radar Online source, what I've gleaned is that Sarah Jessica Parker is willing to do anything to keep And Just Like That going, except take a pay cut.
Which I kind of just don't believe. I wouldn't be surprised if she didn't keep it going.
So after we recorded and I was thinking about it, that was kind of my theory of like, what if Sarah Jessica Parker, whether she saw the reaction to this season, maybe she had a come to Jesus moment after the Adam Friedland podcast where she was like, I can't do this anymore.
I cannot be asked about Carrie Bradshaw one more time.
Well, the other thing I don't believe, so this second Radar story is like, she's doing everything in her power to revive this series somewhere else. Netflix might be interested, Apple might be interested, and it's like, no, HBO is not going to let this show go and become a movie on Netflix or another streaming service because, guys, I don't know if you forgot, HBO has their own streaming service. It's called HBO Max, and Just Like That is an exclusively streaming show on HBO Max.
Yeah. Also, I think we should acknowledge the cover of the New York Post that came out this week. It was a cast photo of the girls, including Samantha, from what I'm assuming is like season three, with the headline, "They Ruined Sex. Ultimate Show About New York Women Gets Axe After Being Sunk by Wokeness." I love that the headline says that, but they're literally all white.
Yeah, that is true. I feel like the other horrifying thing about this New York Post cover is it's brilliant, but it made us realize that there is literally no newsstands. One, in Los Angeles that carry the New York Post, but secondly, we also learned we're basically reduced to one newsstand, and it's in the Valley.
So thank you to friend of the pod, Stephen Smith, for buying our New York Posts. We are going to frame one of them for our new office.
I don't know if you read the article, but it's written by a woman named Kristen Fleming, and it's a piece of genius, Chelsea, because there's no gossip, there's no intel. It's literally just, I guess, Kristen's feelings about the show and kind of going through the controversies over the season. But the article begins with, "Somewhere Kim Cattrall is laughing."
See, the headline alone tells me that the people that work at the New York Post stopped watching And Just Like That, possibly even before season three. Because once they got rid of Che Diaz, they really did dial back the quote unquote wokeness.
Well, yeah. I mean, last season, Anthony flirted with being a bottom. And if last episode was anything to go by, he's back on top. I just love an article made up of nothing, of just conjecture and something someone said, like, down the hall in the New York Post office, because the article ends with, "A younger colleague told me this chapter made her sad and was more of a cautionary tale for 20-somethings. It took the air out of the fantasy and ruined the sex."
What's the cautionary tale? Like, don't age?
I would have said the cautionary tale is like, you'll never find love in your 50s or 60s unless you find those people in your 30s to then date again.
But that didn't even work out for Carrie.
And this young colleague, who I don't think exists, I think might be the writer Kristen Fleming herself, had not even seen Lizette's storyline from this episode.
Oh, also, something else that we need to discuss that we should have touched upon last week is the casting choice for Brady's baby mama. We have since learned that this actor, Ella Olivia Stiller, is Ben Stiller and Christine Taylor's daughter, which means that she shares the same grandmother as Brady.
Right, because for those who do not know, the actress that played Steve's mother, played by the actress Anne Mira, who is the mother to Ben Stiller.
Crazy.
So Brady and Mia are cousins?
Something like that.
Isn't that clever, Chelsea?
So before we discuss this episode, Lord and I have a bit of an announcement. We are introducing a screening of Mahogany, a 50th anniversary screening in Los Angeles later this month on August 22nd. It is a 10 p.m. showing.
It is at the Los Feliz 3. It is part of the American Cinematheque Friend of the Fest, which is a podcast festival. We participated in this in 2023, where we introduced Romy and Michelle. We're very excited to introduce Mahogany. We will also be doing a merch table 30 minutes before the screening.
So come for that. And I know what you guys at home are thinking. Don't you just wish that Sarah Jessica Parker recorded a version of the Mahogany theme song originally sung by Diana Ross?
Do you know where you're going to? Do you like the things that life is showing you? Where are you going to? Do you know? Do you get what you're hoping for, Lila? When you look behind you, there's no open door. What are you hoping for? Do you know?
Thank you to the fuckhead who called into the hotline and alerted us to this. I did not make it to season 3 of Divorce. This takes place in the last season of Divorce. After her daughter loses a basketball game, she's trying to cheer up a bunch of preteen girls.
I also didn't make it that far in Divorce, but I am glad to know that Sarah Jessica Parker did sing the theme to Mahogany.
Because everything comes back to Sex and the City.
But anyway, we will obviously put the links to that event in the show notes. Everyone come. It's going to be super fun.
And, you know, if some reason you don't want to see Mahogany, do you want to see Paul and Tad in the merch line? I know you've heard me talk about Nutrafol for years and thought, that's great for you, Lauren, but does it actually work? There's so many hair growth products on the market, it's hard to know who's the real deal. But I'm here to say Nutrafol isn't like the rest of them. Nutrafol is physician formulated, clinically tested, and dermatologist recommended. That's probably why Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand, trusted by over 1.5 million people. You can feel great about what you're putting into your body since Nutrafol hair growth supplements are backed by peer-reviewed studies and NSF content certified the gold standard in third-party certification for supplements. I have used their women's formula in the past, and I'm currently using their postpartum formula, which targets key root causes of postpartum thinning, physical and emotional stress, which you know I'm under because I am watching this season of And Just Like That, hormonal changes, and nutrient depletion. So that with consistent daily use, I'll start to see thicker, fuller hair and less overall shedding, and that's really all I'm asking for. See thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding in just 3 to 6 months with Nutrafol. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter promo code OUTFIT. Find out why Nutrafol is the best-selling hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code OUTFIT. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code OUTFIT. Okay, let's get into this episode. Penultimate episode. Chelsea, so weird. For a series finale that this is part one of, only 29 minutes long?
So they've made 2 episodes out of 1 again.
Right. So I listened to the Writer's Room podcast this week because I was like, are they going to reference that it's a series finale or not? And it's very clear in the Writer's Room podcast that they look at this as a season finale and not a series finale.
We also kind of know that because of the way that Kristen Davis has been talking about the show's renewal on Are You a Charlotte? Which has been very much like, we don't know if it's getting picked up yet, that kind of energy. We're waiting to hear. So I don't think that she would speak about the show that way if it was planned that this was the final season.
Yeah, and given the way that Kristen has talked about it and also the Dumois story, it does feel like perhaps they were trying to negotiate a 4th season up until the last minute, or I don't know. I always wondered when we got news that Michael Patrick King was going to work on a 3rd season of The Comeback, if negotiations for In Just Like That broke down and maybe his agents came back and like, okay, if not In Just Like That, what about The Comeback?
Right. Yeah, it's just such a bizarre choice if it was in fact canceled to announce that they always knew that this was the final season. If for no other reason than if you say that the show is canceled, the fans just get mad at HBO Max. Whereas if you say that this is the planned series finale, people will just get annoyed at the writers again for delivering an underwhelming series finale because it probably wasn't written that way.
Well, we'll get into it. It's very clear that it was not written this way.
So this episode is titled Forgot About the Boy. It is written by Michael Patrick King and directed by Michael Patrick King and Susan Fales Hill,
who did not appear on the Writer's Room podcast. I found that interesting. We are firmly in fall, heading into winter. It is Thanksgiving. Carrie is back in her old neighborhood buying pies from her neighborhood pie shop. Chelsea, how did you feel about this new lore that got unlocked?
Well, I love Jackie Hoffman, one of the most iconic New York character actors. It's truly insane that she was never on Sex and the City. So I loved seeing her in this role. And it did make me remember, like, right, she did come to the premiere. And I remember thinking, that's random. And now I know why.
So Carrie is buying pies for Thanksgiving, which Miranda is hosting and Brady is going to cook at. And I guess it's getting very close to Thanksgiving and no one else is able to order pies because then we get this crazy interaction.
Ma'am, this woman has been ordering pies from me every Thanksgiving since I opened. Even during lockdown, when no one was going anywhere, she ordered 4 pies and paid for 4 pies. She didn't even pick them up. They sat on that shelf till they turned green. That's the kind of neighbor she is. Did you so much as even think of me during the plague? No, you did not. You're 2 croissants a week at best.
Gotta give it up to Michael Patrick King. That is a great diss. You are 2 croissants a week at best.
So this bit of Carrie Bradshaw lore I find fascinating because isn't it kind of fucked up to let the pies rot on the counter?
Okay, I was just going to say this. I really feel like the problem within Just Like That is reflected in this piece of dialogue. Because on the surface, it seems generous. However, if you think about it, even for a few seconds, it is incredibly a gesture that is shallow, hollow, and like blinded by crazy privilege. I hate to be the person that's like, someone could have eaten these pies, but like someone could have eaten these pies.
Or the bakery could have just saved the costs of the materials and the labor. If Carrie was just like, I'm placing my pie order, I'm not picking anything up, don't bother, just take the money.
Or give them to someone.
Why do we think Carrie didn't pick them up? Was she like one of those really insane COVID people?
That's a great question because this scene is meant to represent Carrie is going back to the old neighborhood, which when I was watching this, I was like, oh, the West Village. And then I had to remember, no, Upper East Side. And I feel like her and Big still lived on the Upper East Side together. So I really have no idea. Again, this is such a reflection of And Just Like That logic.
See, I would think that there would be nothing that Carrie Bradshaw would love to do more than walk all the way downtown to her old apartment.
But it's not all the way downtown.
Okay, you're right. Across
two the blocks. Park?
You're right. So there's no excuse for her to not pick up the pies.
It makes no sense.
Sorry, that took me a while. I'm still processing this episode, clearly.
She's now out of the neighborhood because she finally lives below 30th Street because she lives in Gramercy. So she's gone all the way uptown.
Can we also talk about Carrie's Diane Keaton-esque outfit in this scene? There's something about the combination of a houndstooth blazer and a long strand of pearls that just immediately gives Diane Keaton.
And also Carrie. I mean, Carrie loves a string of pearls.
True, but it's like the blazer, the cape, like Diane Keaton like doesn't like to show any skin unless it's like her wrist or like her ankles. And Carrie Bradshaw is rapidly becoming the same way.
Well, I mean, given the way that Miranda and Charlotte look the previous episode, I feel like Molly and Danny, like when they hear fall, they think Diane Keaton, and they're not wrong.
We all think Diane Keaton when fall rolls around.
Do you know who would love the woman novel?
Diane Keaton.
Diane Keaton. And do you know who I think would enjoy a crisp glass of Diane Keaton's red wine with 2 ice cubes, which is how Diane Keaton drinks her red wine?
Carrie.
Carrie Bradshaw.
Yeah. So she runs into Lizette.
Well, she's stalking her old apartment, which you called out last episode when we were discussing. You were like, there were paparazzi photos of her approaching Perry Street, which we got to remember is actually 73rd Street in the world of Sex and the City and In Just Like That. So she is stalking her old apartment while talking to Miranda. And yes, Lizette just happens to be coming out of the apartment.
She asks Carrie about Aiden, which is sad.
But again, this is so In Just Like That because it's sad and then confusing because Carrie's response, right? Lizette's like, I'm such a bad friend because I was dating a guy for 7 months, which one, I was like, wait, are we supposed to understand that Lizette and her are friends? Because I thought they were more friends in the way of like, this woman sold me her apartment for far below market value. So like once a quarter, I have drinks with her.
Oh yeah. They're definitely like once a quarter drinks friends.
Well, that's why it was weird when Lizette's like, I'm so sorry that I'm such a bad friend. I just got caught up in a relationship that ended 7 months, my longest relationship. And Carrie goes, how are you and Aiden? She goes, ugh, we broke up. 22 years, that's my longest relationship. You were married too big from 2008 to 2022. Aiden was married to Kathy from like 2001 to an unknown date.
Okay, Lauren's like slapping her fist together in a way that sounds like it's simulating sex, just in case if anyone's wondering what that slappy noise is.
I'm like Mark Wahlberg in Fear. I'm just like pounding my fist over my chest in anger.
So Lizette invites her to a party, a pre-Thanksgiving turn-up.
Also known as Friendsgiving. I will say on the Writers Room podcast, Michael Patrick King couldn't think of the name for Friendsgiving, which I found very funny. Did you have the sinking suspicion that I did where I was like, oh, fuck, she's going to buy back her apartment, isn't she?
Yeah.
Because it feels very, again, and just like that logic where they're like, you know what? She's doing it again.
I think she will. I actually think she will, which is the scary part. But we'll get into that more later. Also, this episode has a meeting with her editor who loves her book, loves the woman, but doesn't think that she's received a completed novel.
A manuscript.
Like, yeah, she's like, where's the last chapter, babes?
And Carrie's like, no, it's done. And then that's when her editor, which we've never mentioned this before, it was brought to our attention because we haven't watched Gilded Age season 3. Carrie's editor is also in the Gilded Age.
So amazing.
Do you think that And Just Like That shot themselves in the foot because they just put HBO in a position where they were like, we can only afford one expensive New York show that is exclusively shot on a soundstage that stars Cynthia Nixon and Carrie's editor.
So the editor breaks the news to Carrie, like, what you've written is a romantic tragedy, which I thought was funny because I wonder if the And Just Like That writers perceive the show that they have written as a romantic tragedy.
That's interesting. Well, the editor is making the point because Carrie is sort of aghast at like a woman ending up alone is a tragedy, which I know it's surprising that I will say this. It is sad that the show is coming to an end at this point because it feels like, ooh, if we could just have begun where we are right now, where we're yet again answering the question from Sex and the City of like, is it a tragedy if you end up single and alone? And the editor's like, no, not now. Like, now it's fabulous. But in 1846, it would be deemed a tragedy. And we really know what the writers are doing. They are intimating of, like, there's nothing scarier than a woman who does not have a man or a partner.
So there's another scene where Carrie has drinks with Seema. And I don't know. What happened in this scene? I already forgot.
So Seema lets her know that the people who own the basement apartment, which, again, I cannot believe that we did not know until halfway through this season that Carrie did not own the entire townhouse, but that the people who own the basement apartment are selling it because Duncan will not be renting again, which is a double blow for Carrie because she learns that Duncan won't be coming back, even though he explicitly told her he was not coming back. I do love that now that this unknown couple that owns this apartment finally kicked out their tenant, who clearly pays below market value. I don't know why that's an obsession of mine for this podcast episode, but now that he's finally out, they can sell it. So Seema's like, do you want to buy the apartment for resale value? And Carrie gets very weird again. It made me flash back to the first season when she unloads on Seema. I forget why, but I think when she like knocked over the frame photo of Big and it cracked or something.
Right, yeah.
I feel like Carrie's been nothing but weird in regards to Seema, but whatever. But Carrie gets like very like, what are you intimating about if I should buy this apartment? And Seema's like, babes, I literally am just, I'm a real estate agent. I don't know if you forgot. Just asking if you want to buy this place.
Also, wouldn't you just want to buy that place just to own the whole building? Like, I get that it's too much space for you. We know this, but since your plan is to clearly sell this place and move back to Perry Street,
73rd Street,
what can you do?
We're supposed to understand with this episode that the universe is pushing Carrie out of her comfort zone of being like, you're single, you're alone, stop that, that's bad. Even though, haven't we only seen half of this townhouse? I gotta let it go.
So Carrie goes to Lizette's party,
which was really the moment where I was like, oh, fuck, she's going to move back. And I will give it to Daddy MPK. This was a brilliant fake out.
Yeah.
Or at least I'm hoping it's a fake out and she doesn't ultimately buy this apartment back. So she knocks on her old door. A person she's never seen before opens the door and she is confused for a moment because there's a wall behind the wall of her apartment.
Her Upper East Side apartment has gotten the same sort of haphazard reno that I really associate with Bushwick and Bed-Stuy, where there's just a plywood wall that is erected in an open space.
It's so funny you say that, because when I was watching it with Paul, who also lived in Bushwick, he was like, oh, this is every Gen Xer's fear, that a younger generation is going to move in and Bushwickify their apartment.
But it's also crazy because it's like, we saw Lizette's old apartment and it was nicer than Carrie's.
This is confusing for two reasons. One, her reasoning of why she did this was not for, quote, rent, which I was like, wait, didn't you buy this from her? But two, it's because she doesn't like being alone, which I was like, you lived alone in the other place. You lived alone. Do you remember this, Chelsea? You so lived alone that Carrie once walked into your downstairs apartment because the door was left unlocked. Maybe you feel unsafe because you pass out and leave the door unlocked.
Yeah.
So she is living with her friend Ezekiel and they have split up Carrie's apartment. For those who are not watching the series, you're like, wait, how did they split it up? Well, Ezekiel gets the kitchen because, as Lizette says, who cares? And the living room where Carrie used to write. And Lizette gets that hallway that goes into the bathroom, which is kind of genius. They both have access to the bathroom. And Lizette gets the closet and the bedroom, which she has turned into not only her bedroom, but also her jewelry studio.
Yikes.
Lest you forget she's a jewelry designer.
It's not looking good in there. And I loved seeing the horror on Carrie's face. Not that I wish this for her. Her apartment is so iconic, it's horrifying to see it be desecrated, even as just a passive viewer.
And on the Writer's Room podcast, they were discussing the fact that a detail, I don't know if you noticed this, but they had Carrie's, whatever the floral wallpaper, is it carnation? It was definitely mm-hmm. the Sarah Jessica Parker yeah. wallpaper collection, that they covered over parts of it with black marker because, as they said, that's what a younger person would do.
I can see that.
So again, this is to hit home two points, right? You can never go home again. And for some reason, Lizette has a conversation with her that no human being would have, where Lizette just keeps being like, aren't you scared to live in that big apartment all by yourself?
Okay, but that one line where she's like, you know, I'm afraid of being murdered or worse. And Carrie's like, what's worse? And she's like, I don't know, being kept alive in a cage or something. And then Carrie's like, that's something that would happen on streaming shows. Streaming shows?
Wink, wink.
I can't. SVU is right there.
The line that I couldn't get over is, and I hinted at it a second ago, when Carrie goes, well, I guess whoever said you can't go home again was right. Then we watch Lizette on her phone, and we're supposed to understand she's Googling, and Lizette just pushes her phone out and goes, Thomas Wolfe said that. And it's like, Carrie didn't say that as a question. And then Carrie approaches her empty-ass townhouse and begins writing an epilogue.
And she writes Duncan into this epilogue.
Epilogue. The woman opened the door to her dark home and struck a match to light the candle in the vestibule. The glow from the taper illuminated an envelope waiting for her there on the cold marble table below. She broke the blood-red wax seal and removed the delicate piece of parchment inside. an invitation from Virginia Perry to attend a party to celebrate the return of her cousin Joshua Perry from London to New York City. The woman folded the paper, intrigued. This was the handsome widower Virginia had spoken so highly of.
When I heard this, I texted you and I was like, I can hear Daddy MPK on the Writer's Room podcast being like, now that he's in her story, he could be in her life. But I did not get that from him from this week's Writer's Room podcast. Did you also think for a second, because I was like, ah, Virginia Perry. Virginia's where Aiden's from and she lives on Perry Street. But yet again, I had to remind myself she actually lives on 73rd Street.
Shall we get into Miranda?
Miranda?
So Miranda is real crazy in this episode. There is a pretty fun little scene, I will say, where Carrie invites Miranda and Charlotte over for drinks. And during this scene, Miranda lets it slip that she has invited Brady's baby mama to Thanksgiving without telling him.
Because she doesn't think that Mia's going to come. And why blow up her relationship with her son for something that's not going to happen? We're dipping back into the doofusification of Miranda, and I hate to see it. So there's not much Miranda in this episode, right?
Yeah, Miranda takes a back seat.
So Miranda and Joy are having dinner, Indian takeout, which Joy remarks is way better than anything she had when living in New Delhi, to which Miranda remarks, oh, I get it, you're fancy. But I'm like, that's not her being fancy, that's just her being authentic. Is it fancy that she lived in New Delhi?
I don't know, but I'm just sad that she didn't say anything about curry lingus.
I mean, this season will really make you miss Che.
So then Brady comes in, pissed.
He barges in, which really sucks because, as we previously noted, they really figured out what to do with Brady. Like, we were really enjoying him and his brief moments in these episodes.
Well, I enjoyed him in this episode as well, because I think that his anger at his mom is completely justified. Like, you can't do that without telling him, because Mia has now texted him and been like, yes, I am coming to Thanksgiving, which is how he found out.
Well, also in this scene, we get more information, because when Miranda initially says she's invited Mia to Thanksgiving, you're like, wait, how are they buddies? How much time has transpired between the two episodes? And she begins explaining to Brady, well, you know, when I went back to the salon to apologize and I learned she wasn't speaking to her mother and had no plans on Thanksgiving. We got a call about this, and I do think it's true, because I was like, you know, this is Steve's mother's behavior. We got a call that was like, is Miranda slowly turning into Ma? And I think she might be, which is especially weird because Ma is Mia's grandmother.
No, this is completely unhinged. And I liked when Brady was like, this isn't some fucking Hallmark movie. Because yeah, how does she think this is going to go down? This is Anne just like that. So how could we possibly imagine how this is going to go down?
Well, I also, in true and just like that fashion, like, to introduce this tension with literally one episode to go, because it's very clear the way that Dolly Wells is portraying it, this is the first time Joy is hearing about any of this. And there's a moment where Brady's like, come on, Joy, back me up. And Dolly Wells has this look, and I really felt like, oh my God, Joy is now Carrie. The way Carrie was in the Aiden Wyatt dynamic, Joy is now that person in this Miranda,
oh yeah,
Brady dynamic. And I'm worried that things are going to come to a head in the next episode and that Joy is going to peace out of this situation, which honestly, for Joy, I want that for her.
Yeah, I think that's going to happen because they've already planted the seeds that she can't deal with people with kids, basically. She thinks being around people's kids is awkward, even though her child is like a whole ass grown man with a child of his own on the way.
It's just funny that for someone that doesn't want to be around children, she has two nervy, what are they, English?
They're miniature Italian greyhounds.
There you go. And Brady shouldn't yell around them because they're scared.
So that's what happened in Miranda's world. Charlotte, wow, I truly can't wait to get into all of this.
We have outlines just so that we're on the same page. And I literally wrote for Charlotte, Charlotte misses Rock being a girl, ! Harry can't get hard. That's the storyline. Oh, sorry. I forgot that Harry is annoyed that they are going to Miranda's house for Thanksgiving because she probably uses white bread for her stuffing and has NPR on instead of the football game.
And I was like, wait, are we meant to think that Harry's a Republican based on the NPR comment?
My question is, are we meant to believe that these characters in the intervening years between Sex and the City 2 and the series never shared a holiday together? They clearly don't have family because we never see their family.
Well, also, like, the white bread comment, I was like, I personally do stuffing with multiple kinds of bread, or you could do, like, a cornbread stuffing vibe. So I was like, what stuffing is Harry used to? What is his preference? And we learn what it is, and it is horrifying. Focaccia with oysters and fresh sage.
That's how Charlotte does it.
That is so sickening to me. Have you ever even heard of such a thing?
I have not. I also was like, oyster mushrooms, maybe? Or like oysters?
I think they're oysters. Oysters with focaccia?
How do you say focaccia?
Focaccia. Sorry, bitch, I'm not Italian.
I mean, I'm Italian-American.
You know more than me. You tell me how to pronounce that shit.
Focaccia. I'm sure our Italian listeners are like, actually, you're both wrong.
Shut the fuck up, please.
Anyway, this isn't important because I guess the main driver of Charlotte's storyline is around this moment, Rock comes out in their costume for Thoroughly Modern Millie and looks like a girl? Again, what are we trying to do with this?
Looks like a whole ass woman, I would say. This makeover was so dramatic, not just because of the gender presentation, but because we're used to seeing Rock look like a little kid, like a child. This looks like a young woman and a flapper at that. Also, the fact that Rock came out in slow motion. And
that's the thing is, for those who are not watching the series, I don't know how to explain the storyline other than Charlotte experiences some kind of gender dysphoria, but for her child.
Well, I think that a lot of parents of like trans children sort of mourn to a degree or idealize or romanticize the gender that they thought their child would be.
For sure.
Like, I don't think this is necessarily inaccurate, but I'm kind of surprised that we're back here because I thought we had like moved on from this portion of the show. I thought we were all good with Rock's gender identity.
If I've gleaned anything from season 3 of And Just Like That, it's that woke is dead, baby.
Yeah, is that what this plotline was trying to say?
I don't know, because clearly Rock is, I should explain, Rock is not having any kind of dysphoria. It is about Charlotte seeing their child as...
Seeing what could have been.
I get.
Yeah.
So we did get a call about the Thoroughly Modern Millie of it all. And they were cluing us into the fact that Thoroughly Modern Millie, they were surprised at that choice because it's a deeply fucked up musical. You know, I am musical dumb, but I did look at the Wikipedia and it's about sexual slavery.
Yeah, it's about the story of this woman. Spoiler alert, her name is Millie. And her whole dream is to marry a rich man, but she sort of unwittingly stumbles into this international sex trafficking ring situation. And I have never seen the movie with Julie Andrews, which I know is criminal. I have seen the play, or I've seen the musical. And I don't know how you would adapt it, like, for a high school production. I don't know how you do a high school in 2025 friendly version of Thoroughly Modern Millie. Rock should be in the gay version of Cats. You know, the gay trans version of Cats that is actually referenced in this episode, the Jellicle Ball.
Indeed. So this storyline was partially inspired by the actor that plays Rock was like, I'm a really good singer, by the way. And Michael Patrick King did not believe her. And she kept saying it. She was like, no, I was almost cast in Les Mis. And they were like, yeah, sure, whatever. And they wrote this for her. And it wasn't until she actually recorded the track that she's singing to that, I guess, according to the Writers Room podcast, Michael Patrick King called in and he was like, can she really sing? And they were like, actually, she can.
She can. She was great. She looked fab.
This was delightful. Didn't need it, but it was delightful.
Didn't need it, but it's also, we have to look at this like, this is yet another Broadway reference. I've lost track at this point of how many musical theater references there have been in season 3. There have been a lot. And I wonder if that's another sort of Sarah Jessica Parker thing, perhaps. Because when I think of her, I do think about theater, New York theater. That is one of the things she loves.
And yet, never done it on Sex and the City or And Just Like That.
Yeah.
honestly, I doubt she wants to do another season of it just like that. I'm sure she would much rather be in a musical.
I don't know. She hasn't done a musical in a really long time. Like, I think pre-Sex in the City.
Once Upon a Mattress? I think that
was the, yeah, like the year before.
Yeah, I think that's what she was doing when she shot the pilot. So Charlotte is between a rock, pun intended, and a hard place where she knows that she cannot photograph her child. And so she asked Carrie to do so and send her the photo. And so then there's a very campy scene, I must say.
One of the all-time campiest and just like that moments when she's looking at the photo and crying.
Well, yes. Just to build a picture in your mind, listener, the camera zooming in on Kristen Davis in her closet while she zooms in on her iPhone of a photo of Rock in their Thoroughly Modern Millie costume. And then Charlotte deletes the photo.
Yeah, this show.
The other storyline, as we learn, is Harry cannot get hard, and that's very upsetting to him. So we get this scene where Harry and Charlotte wake up in their tiny-ass bed, and she's happy because she thinks he has a boner, but it's not a boner. What could it be, Chell?
Do I feel something hard against my back?
You do. Mm-hmm. My iPad.
Oh.
I was showing my dick some porn last night to try to remind it what its primary job used to be.
I was showing my dick some porn?
Okay, but also, like, not being able to tell the difference between a hard dick and an iPad.
Again, it's in just like that logic, but Paul did clue me into the fact of, like, what do you mean he was showing his dick some porn? What do you just, like, bring the iPad down to your dick? And by the way, I think that's the grossest line we've ever heard between Sex and the City and In Just Like That.
I don't know. I'm checking your daddy's pee-pee for cancer. It was pretty bad.
It was funny, though.
It's true. So we can only assume that the conclusion of Charlotte's 3-season journey on In Just Like That is that Harry is going to fuck her again.
Ugh, wonderful.
On Thanksgiving.
So excited for Charlotte. Yeah, I'm sure in Miranda's guest bathroom. There's also this thing where...
Oh yeah, is he going to get randomly hard at Thanksgiving dinner?
No.
The oysters and the focaccia just did it for him.
Wait, is that why the stuffing has oysters? Because don't they say that oysters are an aphrodisiac?
Oh, God.
Oh, that's probably what it is. This other thing in the episode, Harry does not want to spend Thanksgiving at Miranda's house, and he explains the reason that he wants to spend Thanksgiving with Charlotte and the family in their apartment is because that was the thing that kept him going during his cancer treatment, is that he thought he was going to die, and the thing that was keeping him going was Thanksgiving with the family. And this is nothing against Evan Handler and his acting. He's been great in other things, but I thought he was joking. Like, I thought he was doing a manipulation with Charlotte that he just didn't want to hear NPR.
Yeah, and I'm still not entirely sure that that isn't the case. Anyway, Seema?
I mean, Seema gets invited to meet Adam's sister on Thanksgiving. That's it.
So does this mean that Thanksgiving will also include Seema, Adam's sister, and the, like, autistic gardener?
His cousin, who was his assistant, yeah.
Yeah.
And some topher.
Oh, that's his cousin, not his nephew.
Or, yeah, maybe his nephew, you're right.
Yeah.
And a topherky, I'm assuming, because Seema seems very upset that she won't get to have meat.
But Adam does say, "I love you," to her.
And Seema says it back, which, according to the Writers' Room podcast, she meant genuinely. Although, again, Sarita Chaudhary, great actress. The way that her as Seema says "I love you" back to Adam does not feel genuine. It kind of feels like an automatic response, but maybe I'm reading too much into this.
You? Okay, moving on to Anthony and Giuseppe.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do you not want to spend 5 minutes discussing LTW's storyline, which has been reduced down to making her husband feel better that he lost the city comptroller election?
I realized something about LTW. This season, almost every single LTW plot is actually about her husband. It actually has nothing to do with her. It's like her husband thinks he's fat. Her husband thinks he's not cool. Her husband is sad that he lost the election.
Her husband thinks she's doing too much.
Yeah. I don't know. I was kind of on Herbert's side in this episode because basically the whole LTW plot in this episode is that he's lost the election and now random people are coming up to him at Thoroughly Modern Millie being like, so sorry you lost. Sorry you lost. I voted for you. Whatever. Just what would happen to someone that lost an election in New York? And he's clearly bummed out about it. He thinks that he let everyone down. And LTW just won't let him be depressed for 5 minutes about it. Like, whose side were you on? Because I was on his side. Like, when he was like, can you just like go to work and like let me be depressed for 5 minutes? I was like, yeah, fair enough. Let this man wallow.
I was going to say I fell for Herbert because during the middle school musical, he looks like he wants to be anywhere but there. And that would be me. But yes, you are highlighting and actually real dynamic between couples where you have one partner that's wanting to make the other feel better and the other one that just wants to wallow. And yeah, that is fair.
But I feel like that is something where wallowing shouldn't even be frowned upon by society because there is kind of a public humiliation element to losing an election, right?
It's funny. I don't know why this reminded me of that, but Seth Rogen was talking about when he was promoting the studio, just how big he felt the fallout from the interview and the email hack of Sony, and he had to get private security, and it was the biggest thing in his life. And he was talking about the fact that like he was doing a movie with Kate Winslet a few months later, and he was referencing that, and she was like, oh yeah, that was that thing with the emails, right? Like, it didn't even register that story for her. Like, the worst moment of his life, most people weren't thinking about because everyone's thinking about themselves.
Right.
Which I do think is an important lesson. Like, I get why he's licking his wounds, but also, it's funny, on the Writer's Room podcast, they were like, that scene where he's working from home, they were like, it was city comptroller, so he shouldn't be wallowing that much. We didn't have him in bed unable to get out of it.
Yeah.
But when Herbert rejects LTW, I was like, and now she goes to the editing studio and kisses her hot editor. But nope.
No, he's still gone, but apparently he's coming back next week.
Is he coming to Thanksgiving?
I don't know if he's coming to Thanksgiving. I just hope someone's coming, period.
And it's not Harry.
I hope it's LTW and him. Just also, are we never going to... She's never going to finish this doc.
We're never getting Michelle Obama. Maybe that was a plan for season 4.
I thought surely this season has to end with the doc comes out. But I don't think she's ever going to get that moment. Also, I realized something about the... And just like that costuming in this episode. I was like, what is it about... And just like that, that makes it look so and just like that versus, say, like the way that the characters were styled in the movies. On And Just Like That, the amount of brightly colored wool overcoats and capes, it's insane. And LTW has like a very insane, shocking orange cape in this episode. But that's one of those things that I think is a really heightened costuming choice, but is something that like no one in the real world has.
I mean, other than Demi Moore and The Substance.
Sure. But she had that one coat she wore over and over and over again. These bitches have closets, like Crayola closets of these things.
I was going to say Demi Moore's character in The Substance would actually do quite well on And Just Like That. Okay. Last, but certainly not least, Anthony and Giuseppe. Giuseppe proposes to Anthony in a Bergdorf's dressing room.
Which means Anthony isn't as hard up as we were led to believe a couple episodes ago.
Oh, by his apartment?
Yeah.
Yes, because he's buying expensive sweaters for Giuseppe.
Yeah. So they get engaged, and then Anthony immediately gets cold feet. I don't know if I need him to marry Giuseppe. I already thought it was weird enough when he married Stanford. You know, like, he doesn't seem like the kind of gay guy that actually would get married. You know, like, he seems like way too old school for that.
Well, also, he basically validates Giuseppe's mother's point because he says to Carrie as he's having this freak out, I cook for him, I shop for him, I don't need a 29-year-old well-hung baby. And it's like, yeah, that was Patti LuPone's point for literally 3 episodes.
Oh God, do I have a 29-year-old extremely well-hung baby myself?
Before we dwell on that, I do want to get into, so there's this exchange between Anthony and Carrie where Anthony reveals that he's having second thoughts and he goes, I know what you would be saying. Why would I get engaged to this man? And Carrie's like, don't worry, you don't need to explain a thing to me because...
So why did I say yes? Because someone I love is down on one knee asking me to marry him. How could I say no?
Sister, I hear you. Aiden, a knee, a street, a dog, a ring. Yes.
For those who have not seen this episode, I gotta give it up. Mario Cantone, as an actor, has a horrified face. Because if you think that Anthony as a character addresses that bizarre haiku that Carrie delivers, you would be wrong.
Well, it's funny because that dialogue is for the audience at home. It is not for Anthony, who probably has zero understanding of how Aiden proposed. Like, they weren't even that good of friends back then.
No.
Like, how the fuck is he supposed to know that Pete was involved?
A dog, a knee. Which, that way that Carrie is speaking feels very similar to Sarah Jessica Parker's outro post dedication eulogy to Carrie that she posted last week.
Which was truly amazing, and we didn't talk enough about it.
And we're not going to talk about it now.
We're not going to talk about it now because it'll take too long, but...
So, yeah. I mean, that's basically the first part of the two-part series finale of End Just Like That. I was hoping that the other episode that was clearly broken up was like, okay, there's a 20-minute part and a 40-minute part, but they were just two 30-minute episodes. And I really doubt that we're going to get an extra long episode. So I hope that Thanksgiving is dealt with very quickly, and then we, I don't know, flash forward to Carrie and the release of her book.
Did you watch the preview, though?
Of course. You mean the preview that is listed as a season finale and not a series finale?
I know, so sus. We see Carrie in a very Christmassy outfit. What else do we learn apart from the fact that the editor comes back? Not much. We don't actually see any of the dinner. We see that Carrie's been set up with Victor Garber, who we failed to mention was also in this episode. Why? I don't know. Love to see him. Never mad to see him. But there was no reason for him to be there.
Yes. The other part where I felt slightly ill, where I was like, oh, fuck. Is she going to start dating Victor Garber now? And as we saw in the preview, yes, Charlotte is trying to set her up with Victor Garber, who is also coming to Miranda's Thanksgiving.
That doesn't bother me. At least, like, Victor Garber is, like, a respectable man.
He does have maybe the funniest line of the episode, where Giuseppe comes up to the group and is like, did you hear? We're engaged. And Victor Garber's like, that's my favorite part, because we're supposed to understand he's a serial monogamist and marrier.
Well, he's been married 3 times, which I don't think is that crazy for a man of that age.
In a metropolitan city, in a business like being a gallerist? No.
Exactly.
Honestly, he's due for a 4th wife. Could that be Carrie? Probably not. Okay.
The woman wondered.
Chelsea, we have talked about this episode for twice its runtime. Is it time to get into some pop culture news?
That makes me sick. Yeah, sure.
Not
but
even.
Wait, can I get wine first?
Sure. Okay, guys, we're back.
Pinot Grigio in hand, which is perfect because we're talking about The Hunting Wives.
Guys, did you watch it?
Everyone needs to watch this show. It is on Netflix. If you haven't heard of it, just imagine Desperate Housewives, but everyone is MAGA and all of the women are fucking each other.
Oh, see, I would describe it as, imagine the true crime female sicko brain if it lived in an open carry state.
It's also kind of like a Get Out type vibe, but about like coastal elites sort of being forced to integrate into a more Republican social circle.
It's based on a book of the same name. And you are correct. It could also be pitched as like a wine mom version of Get Out.
Yeah. But to me, this show is so good because it is exactly what I want, which is some combination of a nighttime soap opera, a straight up comedy, and like a whodunit. It also kind of reminds me of Dead to Me. I don't know if you ever watched that show.
I didn't, which is a huge oversight. It is also, for those who haven't seen it, incredibly gay, which is why you also love this show. And immediately after watching it, we're like, you need to watch it too. And I did not realize how sapphic it was going to be.
Yeah, it just escalates throughout the first season.
So Brittany Snow is a caricature of a liberal character who is forced to move with her husband because he gets a good job to a Texas town.
Yeah, she's like a coastal elite with like a dark secret and kind of a bad attitude, but she's also down to hang.
And also succumbs to peer pressure. So much peer pressure from, I assume, what she initially feels on the surface are simple-minded, conservative housewives, that she is peer pressured into buying a gun, which, oof, will that be her undoing, Chelsea?
And she sort of falls in with this group of conservative women, which is headed up by Margot, played by Malin Ackerman. Imagine like a Melania Trump from Texas if she was funny.
I was going to say, Malin Ackerman, who is not blonde in this series, she's bronzed, as they say, a brown blonde, and yes, looks like a dead ringer for Melania Trump. Our introduction to her is her with her tits out, which it happens maybe like 7 minutes into the show beginning.
So good. I would lay down my life for this character. I totally understand how Brittany Snow gets in over her head with this woman.
Well, I looked into the production history of this show because if you ask me, I could have sworn that this show was put into production after Trump became president, because it really feels like what liberals think conservatives' lives are like. But this went into production in 2024 and only just came out. But again, it does feel like a liberal's nightmare of what would happen to them if they moved to a small conservative town of like, I'm going to get, spoiler alert, accused of murder.
Yeah, I find it amusing that this show actually is a satire of conservative women in a lot of ways. But like, conservative women actually really like this show, which is cool, despite the fact that they're kind of being made fun of. I mean, they literally are being made fun of.
Well, what is the satire? That all of these conservative alpha men, their wives are having sex with each other?
I think the satire is more just the way that their dialogue is written. Like, don't you worry, there aren't any abortion clinics to bomb because of us. You know, it's like that vibe. I love the preacher's wife that's like, I'm just a regular gal. I love to shop and hunt and drink.
And also I have a way too close relationship with my son.
I really like the way that they aestheticize a sort of liberal versus a conservative mindset via how their houses are decorated, because the liberal house is this sort of mid-century modern type house with a very like millennial renovation, whereas the Republican house is like a literal log cabin. Or like the other house with the stone facade that I guess where the preacher's wife lives.
For sure. I call those macaroni grill houses because they just look like exteriors of macaroni grills.
They're amazing.
Here's the thing I couldn't get over every time we flash to Brittany Snow's home, to your point, the mid-century millennial renoed house. How bizarre the mudroom is. Like right off of the door is this weird non-closet closet. I don't know. It bothered me. Also, you realize
I would never in a million years notice such a thing.
Also, later in the series, you realize that her bedroom is just on the first floor, even though you clearly see that there's stairs to a second floor.
All of that passed me by, but I'll take your word for it.
For those who haven't seen it, I don't want to spoil the show itself because there's many twists and turns. It centers around missing women and also a girl that is murdered, and it becomes a whodunit. But there's so many twists and turns that when there's a reveal that a girl is found, I go, who's she?
Also, I think it's worth noting that all of the directors for The Hunting Wives are women, and two of them are beloved by me for various reasons. One of them, Melanie Mayron, who is the star of Girlfriends. I don't know if you've ever seen this movie, the Claudia Wheel film from the 70s, not to be confused with the Y2K era television show.
The Tracy Ellis Ross show, yes.
Yes, no. Different movie. She's the star of that movie. She directed two episodes. And then Cheryl Dunier, iconic Celesbian director.
Who directed Watermelon Woman.
Who directed the Watermelon Woman, did a couple of episodes also.
I know. I saw her name on the list of directors. And then that made me very intrigued for the show. And then I realized, again, how sapphic it was. And I was like, oh, wait, this makes sense.
But yes, do these like very porny, because it is soft porn. Pretty much at times. It's like, do a show like that, but have a cool director.
And also have men in the background. We've yet to get into the fact that it's like, yes, these women are having, I feel like Stefan, this show has everything. Lesbian sex, pegging.
Yeah, a truly fascinating spectrum of sexual expression on this show. But I don't think I've ever seen pegging on television or even in a movie. Have you?
I'm sure I have. It's not coming to mind, but certainly the police chief is the one that is getting pegged.
Yeah.
By the woman who is Malin Ackerman's lover.
I'm actually kind of surprised we didn't get pegging on End Just Like That. Like maybe like Che and their ex-husband.
Season 4.
I could have cried when the show ended, because I know it's going to be so long until we get another season. I need to know what happens. And I genuinely enjoy being in this world. Like, I want to be at that lake house.
Yeah, because as of us recording, The Hunting Wives has not been renewed just yet.
I think it will be.
It's
and if it's not, I'm just going to have to like buy a gun and move to Texas and just live my best life.
All right. I'll miss you. Now, Chelsea, the events of The Hunting Wives, even though it does take place, I should remind you, in a fictional town in Texas, doesn't mean if you move to Texas, this will actually happen to you.
I like to believe that it would.
You can also tell that it was shot pre-Trump getting elected for the fact that Brittany Snow's character drives a Tesla when it was still looked upon as this liberal beacon car.
Yeah, totally. Also, did we mention that Dermot Mulroney is in this show?
We have not. And I have to say that the shot of him in the last scene, like, this show is incredibly raunchy, and I am not someone that gets shocked easily, but he gets a blowjob at the end of the series, and it is so, in my mind, graphic. Like, it's not like you see full frontal nudity, but I was like, oh my God.
See, I like being scandalized.
Of course. And I feel like this show came out of nowhere. And, you know, as someone that was recently contemplating, like, do I cancel my Netflix subscription? Which...
Oh, come on. When have you ever had that thought?
That is true. With this podcast, I have every single streaming service. But if I get marketed to from Netflix one more train wreck series...
Okay, I know. And the train wreck series... should be better. However, the Trainwreck series is kind of dependable because of the brevity of the episodes.
And also the frequency that they pop up. It's like once you get done watching one, they're like, Balloon Boy? Trainwreck? Poop Cruise?
I watched Poop Cruise. I watched Balloon Boy. I watched Astroworld. What else have I watched? I mean, I've watched a lot of them. I watched the American Apparel one. I'm not proud of this. If they were just slightly better, like well-made, like they always sort of interview the most irrelevant people, I find, in the Trainwreck series. If they were just good, it would be the perfect show. Because basically what Trainwreck has done is take interesting stories that would normally be drawn out into like 3-part, 6-part, 10-part limited series. And they just like tell you what the fuck happened in like 50 minutes.
Here's the thing. The first Trainwreck series that they have, I believe, is one that they did last year about Woodstock 99. And that is 3 episodes. And that is the perfect length. And I know people have been wanting us to talk about the American Apparel episode. And it's like the American Apparel episode could have used, I'm not saying 6 or 8 parts. You are correct in that. But 3 parts. There's too much squished in to one 47-minute episode.
Yeah, I don't think it did the story justice, personally. It's good for stories that you have no previous awareness of. Like, I knew nothing about the Poop Cruise, for example. Which, has anyone not heard about this? There was this carnival cruise where they lost power and then the toilets, like, started overflowing and everyone had to shit in bags and things just got very...
Dark
out there on the open sea.
I think because I was raised on... MTV. I definitely remember maybe it was like a Cribs episode with No Doubt or someone where they were showing off their tour bus. And I remember then it was mentioned that they could not poop in the bathroom on the bus, that they had to poop in a bag. And so that's always been in the back of my mind. So I would have known on the Poop Cruise, we got to poop in bags.
I would have rather pooped in a bag than just in a toilet that could never flush that was also in my bedroom.
Sorry, I'm imagining this getting clipped out. I'm just like, Chelsea Fairless once said she'd rather poop in a bag.
I would, but you know what? I'm never going on a cruise ever. Not that I ever have, but I never will, because I just watched Poop Cruise and I just watched Amy Bradley is Missing, which is also on Netflix, which is one of the most upsetting things I've ever seen in my life. But a good true crime docuseries, if you want to know the story of a woman that was trafficked off of a cruise ship, a lesbian that is now some sort of like sex slave.
Is that what you believe?
Allegedly.
You don't believe that she just fell into the...
I do not believe that she fell.
The deep ocean?
No, absolutely not.
And could not be retrieved?
No.
I will say, and this does sound like Netflix Spawn, but it is not. I've been enjoying the Shane Gillis series Tires, which the second season debuted, and it's much better than the first season. And
I've never even heard of this.
It's on Netflix. Can I tell you an issue I have with the Netflix interface? Why do they purposely hide the shit that you're actively watching? Like, when you go back into the app...
Oh, don't even get me started. Why can't Apple TV, like, not to be confused with Apple TV Plus, but like literally my Apple TV, why can't it just aggregate every show I watch on a single screen?
Like, you want at the same time to watch everything that you want to watch?
I just want to be able to see what I've been watching on all of these various streaming platforms in one place. Shouldn't that be possible?
It's funny. When we lived together many years ago, you once watched The View, I assume on Hulu. And on my Apple TV, it always comes up as things you've just watched. They're like, today's View episode.
See, I watch The View on Hulu not every day. Actually, not since Trump got reelected. It's too dark. I don't need that vibe in my life anymore. Although I did watch the End Just Like That episode, of course. But no, I have to like search for The View on Hulu always, even though I watch it like much more than your average person. Or at least I have in the past.
Well, I've been refreshing my feed because there are unsubstantiated reports that The View got canceled. But that is coming from conservative Twitter accounts. So I don't believe that.
I mean, that would really upset me. Even though I'm not watching it now, it's done a lot for me in my life.
Well, also to the universe, I can't have The View get canceled the same week that the End Just Like That series finale is happening. I need my girl focused. Eye on the prize.
Yeah. It just makes me sad that Rosie O'Donnell, aka Sister Mary from And Just Like That, is in Ireland right now and not back on The View where she belongs.
Well, Chelsea, you know, there is a way that we could help Rosie O'Donnell. I don't know if you saw her latest Instagram post, but she's selling her Nissan Juke that she bought, I assume, in Ireland. And if we could take it off of her hands, that would really help her out.
Wait, she's selling a car?
Yes. One day ago, she posted, I've decided to sell my Nissan Juke. Drove it home from the Nissan dealer and haven't touched it since. DM if you're interested. I will give you all the details. I'm too old to learn how to drive on the left! !
I love her. She uses the internet in such a organic way. She's not spending 2 seconds thinking before she clicks post. You know what I mean? She's like screenshotting someone's Instagram story and posting it on Main, not giving two fucks. And that I admire.
Do you remember that time that Mia Farrow wished one of her children a happy birthday and you realized that she had screen capped a Google search of that child to find a photo of that child?
Oh, yeah. And it was just like Mia Farrow children that she had searched for. That's the best.
All right, we have to go.
We gotta go. But we will be back next week to discuss the series finale of And Just Like That. Can you believe the last recap we will ever do?
Until there's inevitably a film about this. They'll do something. They'll do a documentary. They'll do a podcast series. It's not dead.
No.
It's just going dormant for a little while. But you know who's not going dormant? Us. We have to go off and record our after show. We hope to see you there.
See you there?
Hear you there?
I don't fucking know. Anyway, bye, guys. Thank you for listening.
We'll see you next week. Well, we won't see you next week. I don't know.
Shut the fuck up. Let's end the episode.
All right. Bye, guys.